I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Yen Shan, Associate Professor of Journalism at Cal Poly State University in San Luis Obispo. Yen shares tales of growing up and attending university in China, her decision to come to America for graduate studies at Southern Florida State University, and her doctorate at the University of Georgia. She subsequently accepted the position as Associate Professor of Journalism at Cal Poly State University in 2016. Come along and join Yen as she shares fascinating stories of her family life in China, her university studies there, and cultural nuances that are distinctive from daily life in America. Today, Yen remains passionate about imparting strategic, learn-by-doing journalism skills in her classes at Cal Poly. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm Yen. I'm so honored to be here in your show to talk about my path to Cal Poly and to talk about what brought me to America. And so I'm very happy that we have this conversation.
Well, as you know, I spent a lot of time in China going back before you were born.
Yeah.
And so I've watched those same changes that you grew up with. So you grew up in a small town.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Anhui province.
It was an agricultural village?
It's actually a village, you know, because of railway.
Oh, okay.
It become much more developed. Mm-hmm. So I would describe it as a transportation center,
sure.
Like a hub.
You know, I was in Ningbo years ago, and Ningbo is called a village.
Yes.
And it's like 4 million. And I go, that doesn't make sense.
And
village has to denote of what it does, not its size.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have a very different definitions of village versus city in China. So my hometown, I would describe it as very like industrial because of the railway and the transportation. Now like everything is
electric and speed train.
But now it still serves as a, you know, the transportation hub from city to city. Yeah, so that's where I grew up.
And both your mom and your dad were college graduates, right?
Yes.
Professors, or what did they do?
Yeah, my father, he's retired now, but he taught economics in college. And my mother, she is a physician. She works at the health center on campus. I actually grew up on a college like environment. So I think maybe like somehow, like, you know, maybe somehow that's why I chose to be a professor in America, you know, because this is how I grew up. I love interacting with people. I love, when I was little, I observing my father teach classes and interacting with students. So maybe that kind of planted a seed on my mind. Wanted to be a professor or teacher.
Interesting. So your parents grew up in the apex of the Cultural Revolution.
Yeah.
So that was the day of the Red Guard and a lot of ugly episode in China in a lot of respects. Did they ever tell you stories and talk about their time growing up?
Yeah, I think the experiences, what's interesting is I've had some deep conversation with my father. He was willing to share more. And from my mother, we have a very brief conversation. I think what's interesting for my parents is they have pretty different experiences during that Cultural Revolution because they are in different places.
Mm-hmm.
So my father, he grew up in Tianjin. You know, it's a very big city. It's next to Beijing. It's very industrial. It's much more developed. So the social movement at that time, especially during the Cultural Revolution, that the Red Guard, I would describe it's more active. It was much more active. A lot of things happened.
But there was a lot of momentum in the rural communities at that time, right?
Yeah.
So your mom was too young, but there was, Mao Zedong came up with the whole barefoot doctors.
Mm.
I knew a Chinese woman who grew up there during that time. She went to med school, like in England, and was forced to go back and become tutor under a barefoot doctor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was very interesting.
Yeah, so that did not happen to your mother.
No, my mother, like, she grew up in a very small town, like countryside mm-hmm. of China. You know, like, the town have a very small population. At that time, she was small. Like, she was 8 or 9.
Yeah, yeah.
So she barely know what happened. A lot of things she heard from my grandpa. I mean, according to her description, you know, she, at that little age, like, she know, like, sometimes it was dangerous to go outside, but most of the time she felt, you know, fine and safe. But for my father's side, like, my father have, I would say, more extensive experiences with that era. And he was able to tell me a little bit more about what happened in Tianjin and the Red Guard, like, gathered together. So I think what's interesting is, you know, it's, for my parents, really depends on where they were. And they have drastically different experiences. Yeah.
Just like you had very drastically different
experiences for me. Yeah.
So by the time you entered university, China was really opening up and blossoming as a world player.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely, you know, I was in college from 2005 to 2009, and I majored in journalism. I think I wanted to study journalism to be a storyteller. Like, I really wanted to, you know, be able to record what happened. You know, I'm interested in human stories, like what you do for your work. So I decided to study journalism. I think my concentration at that time was production. Yeah, so...
In what medium did you work in?
Primarily, overtraining at that time was still, like, traditional, like, legacy media, like,
so
television.
Print and TV?
And a little bit radio, but primarily TV at that time was the new media. Internet was started, like, you know, we started to learn how to work with computers and stuff. But there was no social media at that time, so, you know, internet was still, like, relatively new.
So, as an undergraduate, in your mind, did you think you would just stay where you were in that region?
Yeah, that was a plan, actually, at the beginning. Like, after I graduated, I actually took an internship when I was senior to intern in a local newspaper, so primarily print. So I would interview people, you know, I would, like, write story, and my editor at that time would help me edit the stories. So the medium at that time was primarily print. So I had that experiences for a year. And after I graduated, I work in Nanjing TV station.
Oh, cool.
You know, it's a local station, but it's big enough to produce its own show.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked at the one of the, you know, like, assistant producer for a, they have these, like, not necessarily late night show, but it's a show broadcast from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Wow.
Primarily cover, like, local stories.
Mm. Features.
Yeah, like, feature stories. Mm-hmm. And it's primarily about, like, you know, everyday life here in Nanjing. And the team that I collaborated at that time, we primarily focusing on the education news. So that was the focus. And there are some stories that we do on a regular basis, like college admission exam, which is a big deal in China.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my focus becomes slightly into education. Yeah, it was a very, very, like, interesting time.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to have both experiences in print and experiences in TV production. Mm-hmm. So that taught me a lot.
But something happened. There was a shift. Your horizons widened. What was it? What tempted you?
Yeah, I think for me, I always have this urge, you know, I wanted to see what other country practiced journalism or storytelling. I think that always what I kind of dream of. When I was in college, we were still have access to New York Times, like the English version, and Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to the library and I would read all the newspaper in English. And that's something I always enjoyed doing when I was in college. So I think I always have this desire to explore what other country practice journalism. I was exposed to a lot of, you know, journalistic storytelling from New York Times and Wall Street Journal. So I think definitely America would be the place that I wanted to go.
Were there a lot of similarities, though, culturally, in how you produced and what you focused on?
Some similarities. I mean, the technical stuff, like the style of writing, you know, how you work with the equipment and gears, the technic stuffs are similar. But the mentality, like the way you approach a stories, or even thinking about as a reporter or journalist, who I'm writing for, I think that question is very different.
Did you feel any cultural, political pressure to conform within certain parameters?
At that time, I didn't necessarily feel a lot of pressure.
You felt free to approach.
When I decided that I wanted to apply to school in America, I talked to my parents, I talked to the friends, my professor at that time, they were all very supportive. I don't know if this is the case at this point, but when I make that decision, everyone seems to be very supportive of my decision. And when I work in the TV station at that time, my producer, who was a senior producer, and she shadowed me a lot, and she actually encouraged me to do that. And so,
how did you target where you wanted to go and what you wanted to do in America?
Yeah, I think it's one of the interesting thing about it is I wanted to, before I decided that I wanted to apply to a school here in America, at that time they were doing a lot of educational expo in Nanjing. So what they do, it's like an event or conference, and they invite a lot of American college, their admission office, to come to China and to, you know, to have a table, have a station.
For recruiting?
For recruiting. So I actually went to several events. It was in downtown Nanjing. It was very fancy. I was able to connect with someone from University of Central Florida. I still remember his name. His name is Mark. And we had this very fascinating conversation. He introduced me to the journalism school at UCF. So, you know, like we talked about my experiences and what makes me qualified to, you know, to apply to the program.
This was a graduate program?
Yeah, this is a graduate program. That was kind of open, like a potential window or door. Yeah, that was, you know, just opportunity after opportunity. Like it's, I don't know, like somehow it lead me to my way to America.
Did you wind up going to Florida then?
Yes, I did. So I end up going to UCF. They have a graduate program in journalism and mass communication. So I studied there for 2 years. You know, I absolutely had a fantastic time there. It's a program that combine like practical as well as like that theoretical that you need, because for me, I have to relearn so much about journalism. The paradigm shift about journalism, you know, because when I was in college, we were over curriculum more focusing on telling stories that would fit into a specific political narrative. But here in America, we were taught that journalism was supposed to serve the public. And I think at that time, it took me a while to grasp that idea about, like, who are the public? You know, who are we serving?
Right.
I think that kind of set up the foundation for me to learn what actually is journalism, how that different compared to what I was taught about journalism in China. So, yeah.
So when you graduated, then what?
You mean graduated from UCF?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
what, you know, what did you think you were going to do and what did you wind up doing?
At that time, you know, when I graduated, I feel like I still need to learn more. I mean, there's so much that I feel like I didn't know or I didn't learn, especially about, you know, like I remember I took a class when I was at UCF is, you know, media law and ethics. They talked about the three pillars of America politics. They talk about the freedom of speech, the First Amendment. So it was a very difficult class. I almost failed.
Wow.
But I just feel like there's so much that I do not know at that time. So at that time, one of my professors said, why don't you apply to a doctoral program to learn more? I said, okay, I will give a try. So she recommended a few programs. I end up going to University of Georgia to pursue my doctorate degree there.
Was it just mass communication, or what was the doctorate in?
Yeah, at that time, advertising and public relations. I think one of the things I decided to kind of slightly change my trajectory is the storytelling and creative aspect of that. I think that connect to some of the fundamental that I learned is about how do you tell a story, or how do you craft your message. So that's something I feel like I haven't been able to have a lot of experiences. Mm-hmm. I wanted to learn more.
Yeah,
so I end up becoming a bulldog, right? Georgia bulldog. I was at Georgia for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And then what? How did you wind up in academia?
Yeah. It's just kind of, you know, like, I don't know whether it's destiny or just faith. When I was at Georgia, I fall in love with teaching somehow and never thought I would be interested in teaching. But I just love to be able in the classroom and kind of share my experiences and perspective with, you know, my students.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I don't actually consider they're my student. I think we're learning together,
right.
Especially, you know, in media. And I think about it, then I feel like teaching would be the job that I will never get tired of.
Did you first start teaching in Georgia?
Yes, mm-hmm. I did. Yeah.
At the university?
Yeah. So I was a TA for 1 year, you know, for 1.5 years. And I started to, you know, I started to teach a class. It's a research methodology. It's a pretty dry class. But it's I see this as a challenge, you know, for myself. Is how can you convey a drying topic to be something interesting and engaging? Yeah, I was able to do that when I was at Georgia.
And how did you wind up from there to here?
Yeah, Cal Poly, you know, it's a very interesting path from the East Coast to the West Coast, right? Before I came to Cal Poly, I had no knowledge or experiences of exposure of California. California sounds like a beautiful state, but it's so far away from me. So after I graduated from my doctoral program, I became a visiting assistant professor at one of the universities in Florida. It's University of South Florida in Tampa. So I taught there for 2 years. Then I was looking for a more permanent position, and I saw there was an opening here in the journalism program, and the class they listed like fit exactly with my experiences. I've taught these classes before, so I decided to give a try.
And what year was that?
That was early 2016.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I've been here for a while, though.
Yeah.
I still, like, even it have already been 8 years, I still remember vividly, like, the day I visited SLO and Cal Poly. Coming from Tampa, like, it was sunny, it was warm, and the day I landed in SLO, it was the first week of January. It was stormy. It was raining. I landed at the local airport. Somehow I was in shock. Like, this is not the California.
Yeah.
I was envisioning, like, you know, because I was thinking about California, like palm trees, like sunny beach, and skyscrapers in L.A. But SLO, like, is a very different world than I anticipated.
Yeah.
But after I came to, like, took a tour of the program and meeting folks here in the program, and Professor Mary Glick was still the chair at that time. So
she retired recently, right?
Yeah. She
Glick.
Mary Glick. So I immediately feel like something clicked. I think primarily because it's a very warm, supportive department. Everyone was super friendly. Everyone was super supportive. And another thing was appealing to me at that time is the curriculum itself, like the learn by doing approach. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was a firm believer that I can't learn if I'm not practicing these skills.
Right.
So I immediately felt like there was a click. And I also had conversation with students. I love the student media that we have. It's very practical oriented. The students are very hands-on, and they're very eager to learn. So that's something I love about the school.
Are you able to cherry pick some classes that you enjoy the most?
Yeah, I mean, there are some classes. I think I've enjoyed all the classes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite closest to your heart?
It's hard to pick. I mean, I absolutely love all the classes. But if I had to pick a class, I would say it's a senior practicum class that I started to teach a couple years ago. It's a small class with 20 students. Every quarter, we worked on a campaign or like a project.
Mm-hmm. And what's the theme, the breadth of themes that you can take on?
Yeah, the overarching theme is to serve as a PR support for student media, like mm-hmm. whatever at Mustang Media Group is doing or planning to do or have the needs.
So it might be print or it might be radio.
Yeah, it might be audience engagement, might be social media, might mm-hmm. be events. So the overarching goal is to support the PR operation of student media.
So but you're still doing PR?
Yeah, yeah. Every quarter is slightly changed, mm-hmm. the, you know, exactly what we do. The nuances that we do change slightly, but the goal remain the same.
Do classes from freshman up to fourth year?
Sort of. The classes I teach right now mm-hmm. are primarily geared towards upperclassmen. So there are some classes I had freshmen or I had second years. The practicum class I was discussing earlier, primarily like everyone in that class are seniors. So they're graduating senior. So if I had to pick a class, I would say, you know, the senior practicum class. I equally love and enjoy all the classes I teach. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
How does your background, your history, being an international person, how does that dovetail to what you teach the kids? Because you have a different history and a different worldview than they do.
That's a fantastic question. I reflect and thought about that question a lot. I think my international background, like you, I was able to travel to a lot of different places. I think I bring that diverse perspective to the classroom. Sometimes I feel like our student, they may see the world in a certain way. I feel like it's my job and my responsibility to help them see things from a different perspective mm-hmm. or exposed to things from different perspectives.
And how receptive are they? Do you ever see that kind of wow moment?
Yeah, sometimes. So like, for example, like the advertising class I teach, I show them a McDonald's ad that I saw when I was little. It's the first McDonald's ad in China in Mandarin. It was aired in 1998, way before they were born. And it just kind of opened their mind about how things have changed or how you have to adapt your content, your message to different audiences, mm-hmm. right?
Contextually, time and place.
Yes. Yeah. So we had extensive discussions, like talk about what is the most, like if you wanted to connect to a different groups of audiences, may share different worldview, may speak different languages, may practice different rituals, or how would you able to find that human component that would connect with them? So I think that's something I thought a lot, and I mm-hmm. kind of, you know, I feel like my experiences, my perspective as an international student, like I was an international student before, now international faculty, be able to connect with them. And also, I feel like this generation of students have a much wider worldview because of social media mm-hmm. and internet. And so I think they're more willing to accept, you know, like this idea about connecting with different audiences, with different groups. It's definitely like very, 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 very interesting experiences for me.
So you've been on the other side of the world for quite a while now. Your mom and dad are still alive, and so it follows that you probably are able to return home once in a while to visit the family?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever go back to the university where you were an undergrad?
Yeah, you know, I visited China last year in 2023. So I was in China for 3 weeks, so like I was able to travel back to Nanjing.
Mm-hmm. So you spent most of your time in Nanjing?
Yeah, some days I spent most of my time with in my hometown, mm-hmm. to primarily visiting my grandpa, who is still alive. Great. And 19-2 and going strong.
Nice.
You know, like the purpose for me to visit back to China is primarily to see him as frequently as I can.
Yeah.
And because COVID have shut down everything, so I wasn't able to travel back in 3 years. And so it was nice to be able to go back and visit him. Yeah.
What are the most striking changes and evolutions or devolutions in China that you've noticed since you left?
Oh, yeah. That's where I'm going to start. I think the immediate change that I saw, like, is they are no longer using the physical money anymore. Like everything is like, you know, mobile, right?
I was with a group of fourth year journalism students from Xi'an, mm-hmm. and none of them have purses.
Yes.
None.
Everything is on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
What was funny is like last year when I visited home, I still bring cash with me.
But they go, what's that?
Like, what's that? Like, yeah. No, I'm not going to touch that, right?
Yeah, so, I think I tried to use a yuan in the shop, and they're going, what's that for?
Yeah, and like even if you go, like the ticketing, right? Mm-hmm. You go to the train station, they don't give you a physical ticket anymore. You just scan your ID, mm-hmm. or you just scan your phone. That was definitely an immediate shock. Mm-hmm. To me.
Because that wasn't operative when you were in college there at all.
Yeah. So, like, even the time when I left, even before COVID, I was able to travel back and forth much more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, people were still using cash or credit card or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But now, like, everything is, you know, like, QR code, and you pay. And that was just kind of, you know, immediate reaction that I had. I don't know, I have mixed thought about it. So in some way, I love the convenience of it.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, it doesn't seem as inclusive. Yeah. Like, what if you are someone who just, you know, don't have a phone, or if you're just someone that you are, like, you're a foreigner, you're a traveler, you don't necessarily have a phone in China, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, I don't know, thinking about my grandpa, who is 19-2, like, he doesn't know how to scan our QR code and pay.
Yeah.
So, like, I do have mixed reaction with that.
But even today, here in California, it hasn't evolved nearly to that point. But I think, how would somebody without a phone,
function? Survive. Function,
yeah.
Definitely.
Everywhere you go, the doctor, the airport, or whatever, I mean, you're kind of silenced without a phone.
Yeah, definitely. So that's one thing I feel like, wow, that was very, very different compared to, like, even 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing I noticed, you know, because when I was in China, I also travel to meet friends and, you know, family. So I was on train a lot. Another interesting fact or thing or observation that I had is everyone just glued to their phone. I mean, they were browsing like TikTok or the Chinese version of TikTok, which mm-hmm. is Douyin, or whatever, you know, short film, like short video app they were using. So somehow it feels sad, you know, because I'm a talker. Like sometimes I talk to strangers on the train and people looked at me like, what was wrong with you? So it reminded me like when I was in college, I also travel a lot by train. Like it was so easy to have a conversation with a stranger on the train. Nothing better to do. Like, right. You're going to talk, right? But now it's just everyone is on their phone. So I feel like that personal connection.
I have real concerns about that.
Yeah.
Decline and fall of Western civilization.
Yeah. Like, can we just put down the phone for a minute and have a real conversation? So I think that's something, you know, that was missing, and I feel like I would rather go back to, I don't know, like the old days when I can have casual conversation with strangers on a train. Again, on top of that, everything is so new, like fancy, like in China now, like the airport is just fancy, like everything.
Oh my God.
Fancy. And
like that bullet train to Shanghai Airport.
Yeah, like the bullet train.
200 miles an hour.
Totally, yeah. It feels so different now. Mm-hmm. I mean.
But we talked the other day about ancient towns in China, and you can still go off that beaten path. I've been in villages where no cars could get in.
Yeah.
Because the roads were built for donkeys and too narrow.
Yeah.
So you can still go back in time in China.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely certain places you can still have that little village where, you know, you have to travel by foot or just, you know, by horse or something.
Yeah.
But my concern is like these places are shrinking. Places will be more difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they become kind of Disneylands of sort.
Yeah.
You know, they can't be viable producing communities.
Yeah.
Because of transportation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But thankfully, there's some of them are still there.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We're going to come back. I'm going to do part two with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah, it'd be cool to even jump into one of your classes and observe the kids and your interaction.
Yeah, that would be such a fantastic, you know, idea. Unfortunately, I'm not teaching this fall. Mm-hmm. Like, if I do,
You're on sabbatical right now.
Yeah, I'm on sabbatical now.
You tenured?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, I mean, thank God.
Right? Yeah.
It's nice to have that, like, time away from classroom, like, to recalibrate and refocusing. I attended, like, this summer in July, I attended a workshop. It's a teaching and design workshop in Stanford University for a week. I've learned so much, and I feel like I wanted to kind of recalibrate, kind of process what I learned from the workshop, kind of design some of these components in my classroom.
In teaching, yeah.
Yeah, so I will be teaching in spring.
What classes do you know what you have yet?
We're still working on the spring schedule at this point, but I'm probably going to teach the same classes I teach, which is introduction class to advertising, like some of the fundamental basic of advertising. Hopefully, I will be teaching that social media class I designed a couple years ago, as well as like that senior practicum class in PR.
So you want to learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
For any questions, you can definitely, I'm not as active as what I wanted on social media, like I teach social media,
somehow
I have that concern about privacy, definitely you can follow me on Instagram, it's Shan and Pepper. Pepper is the name of my first dog. And so, yeah, don't necessarily share or post a lot on Instagram, but I do check messages or things, stuff like that. If anyone wanted to learn more about my life here at Cal Poly, feel free to reach out. My name, Yan Shan, Associate Professor, Journalism Department here at Cal Poly.
Awesome. Thank you, Yan. Really fun. Making me want to go back to China.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Maybe next time we should, like, you know, form a team.
That would
like,
be.
That would go be visit great. China together.
Yeah. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Cal Poly State University.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.